You're in the middle of a conversation with your boss, discussing familiar work topics, challenges, when suddenly the words you've said multiple times, countless times before in your career, they come out wrong. You drop a syllable here, you flip-flop two sounds in a word there, and you think, what on earth is going on? But you correct it, you recover, you play it off, and you go on with your conversation. But over time, you notice this happens every now and then. And you think, well, I'm just tired. I've been working a lot of long hours. I had a fight with my wife. You know, whatever the case may be, you just kind of push past it and not give it too much thought. But over time, months turn into years. A year, 2 years. These slip-ups in your speech keep happening more often, and in the back of your mind, you're like, yeah, that's weird, but you don't seek help. It's not until you go see your doctor for your primary, you know, your annual visit, and he hears your speech and says, you need to go see a neurologist. He doesn't tell you anything more than that. You go to the neurologist, you go through a myriad of tests from MRIs, PET scans, spinal tap, blood draws, you know, you name it, and they poke you with it, right? And so following all these tests, you get handed the diagnosis of primary progressive aphasia. What does this mean? And where do you go from here?
Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast with Genevieve Richardson. Genevieve is a speech-language pathologist rehabilitating adults with communication challenges after a stroke or due to a neurological impairment. Get equipped with knowledge from experts in the field and professionals you need to know. We'll hear stories and experiences from others who are navigating life with aphasia. So, put your earphones in and take a walk outside. This isn't just a podcast. This is a community, a resource, and a support system. We're in this together. Do life.
Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast. We dive deep into the world of aphasia, Parkinson's disease, and primary progressive aphasia. We bring you these episodes to educate, to help you understand not only for those of you who have a direct impact with one of these diagnoses, but those of your friends and family, your neighbors, the people at church, people in book club, so that they can understand in a relatable way these conditions and how they impact others and how they impact you interacting with others that are directly impacted by these diagnoses. So today is our first episode talking about primary progressive aphasia. And a little confession from you, I have rewritten and re-researched and added in and taken out and reconfigured this particular episode no less than 6 times today. I started writing this 2 weeks ago and just couldn't decide on the angle I wanted to take. It's so different in its onset, primary progressive aphasia, also known as PPA. When you get a diagnosis and you can process what the implications could be as your life goes forward, that's very different than a stroke that hits you right between the eyes, literally and figuratively, right? A stroke that causes aphasia or head injury that causes aphasia is sudden. But primary progressive aphasia, by definition, is progressive. And so with that brings a whole host of junk with it. There's emotional, there's financial, there's relational, there's connection, there's job, there's future planning. There are so many implications of this particular diagnosis. So this is going to be our first episode about primary progressive aphasia. It's more of an overview. And then in future episodes, we're going to dig into different components of primary progressive aphasia, Because even though you might be listening to this podcast because you or someone you know has aphasia, you might end up knowing somebody else who has primary progressive aphasia. And there are similarities and differences, and that's kind of what I want to highlight and contrast in this episode as I introduce you to primary progressive aphasia. So let's jump in. This is about awareness and education. I want you to have a basic understanding of it because I want you to understand the implications for folks impacted with this. So here we go. What exactly is primary progressive aphasia? It's a neurodegenerative disorder. So that means there are changes happening in the brain. I'm not going to get into the details of all that because I'm not going to do it justice. If this is something you want to know more about, I will get an expert on the podcast to explain more of that. But it has to do with there are changes in the brain. Typically, it's the left hemisphere, you know, where the language centers are for a person who is right-handed. A disruption of blood flow or a hemorrhage can impact a certain area of the brain and you get symptoms. It's kind of similar in primary progressive aphasia. PPA can impact speaking, listening, reading, writing, just like it does in aphasia. And because of its progressive nature, these changes in speech and language might be real subtle. They might be intermittent, happening just now and again, not consistently. But over time, it worsens because there is degeneration, a breakdown in the brain, in the language areas that are causing these symptoms that you see in speech and language. So let's talk about the three types of PPA. And in a few minutes, I'm going to compare and contrast a little bit of these three PPAs to aphasias. Because if you've been listening to this podcast in order, we just did an episode about non-fluent aphasia and fluent aphasia, those being broad categories of aphasias. And then in those episodes, I talked about some of the specific aphasias. And aphasias, just like primary progressive aphasia, we label them, although not every aphasia or PPA can completely be labeled. It has to do with a constellation of symptoms. And so if I say someone has Broca's aphasia, to those who are familiar with that word, it brings to mind what the communication issues could be. So it's the same way with PPA. So if I say someone has agrammatic PPA, it gives you an impression of what could be going on with it. So I'm trying to break this down and make it super understandable and not get caught up in all the jargon. But let's give you some names for the three types of PPA. The first one is agrammatic PPA. Agrammatic PPA makes speaking smoothly challenging. Difficulty finding words and building sentences. That's agrammatic. Logopenic PPA means there's often pausing or struggling to find the right words, sometimes using words that sound close but aren't quite correct. And then we have semantic PPA, where it involves speaking fluently, but the words might not make much sense, and understanding others becomes really tough. So let's jump into a little more of the details on each of these three PPAs, and it's in this section I'm going to contrast it with aphasias. Agrammatic PPA profoundly impacts how one constructs sentences. In English, we have a certain order of words. In Spanish, in their grammar, there is a certain order of words that we come to expect. So someone with agrammatic PPA, they may remember the words they want to say, but it's hard for them to put them in order to make them grammatically correct in their sentences. Conversations can be halting with noticeable efforts to speak fluently or fluidly. While single words can be understood, following complex sentences becomes increasingly difficult. This subtype of PPA challenges not just the ability to communicate, but also impacts listening comprehension. Yet, with these challenges, the person's thoughts, feelings remain intact, and they struggle to find new pathways to express themselves and find understanding. So, agrammatic PPA shares features with several types of aphasia, but it most closely resembles Broca's aphasia, which is a non-fluent aphasia. In agrammatic PPA and Broca's, individuals have challenges producing speech. Speech is often halting, effortful, and it just doesn't have that normal rhythm and flow in normal conversation. They know what they want to say, but they struggle to form complete sentences, leading to speech that is grammatically simplified, where words, the small little connector words and the, and little prepositions like in and or at, those kinds of things are left out. So there's a noticeable absence of function words, and endings on words might be left out. So instead of saying walked, they might just say walk. They leave off those endings on words. So those with agrammatic PPA and individuals with Broca's generally have better comprehension skills compared to their expression ability, compared to how they speak and express themselves. They may still have difficulties understanding complex sentences despite the differences of onset, PPA being slow onset and progressing, Broca's aphasia often coming from a stroke, so it's a sudden onset. They bear the same resemblance in that they have trouble communicating, saying what they want to say. Their speech is not fluid, but their comprehension is better than their expression. So that's how they are similar and how they're a little different. So let's move on to logopenic PPA. This is a condition that touches the core of one's ability to communicate. It's like having the word on the tip of your tongue, but you just can't get it out. Conversations can be interrupted by pauses while the person is trying to find that word that they want to say. It might come out with a similar word, where they might make a substitution for similar, but it's not quite correct to the context that they're speaking in. But their understanding remains stronger than their expression. So kind of some similarities to the agrammatic PPA. So this reshapes how individuals express themselves, because we need to understand that they can understand more than they can express. So it's important to find ways for them to express themselves, share their stories and experiences. So logopenic primary progressive aphasia shares characteristics mostly with Wernicke's aphasia, often referred to as affluent aphasia. It's less about the fluidity, because in a Wernicke's aphasia, they often sound like you should be understanding them, like they're speaking in a foreign language with that normal rhythm and flow. Logopenic is kind of like it, but not exactly like it. Where they are similar is that you might have words that don't make sense. In the aphasia world, we talk about neologisms. They're like made up words. They sound like they make sense and they flowed perfectly in the sentence, but we don't have a meaning for them. So it affects their fluency and the cohesion of their communication. So logopenic PPA affects the retrieval of words and the repetition of phrases and sentences. And they usually have pretty good understanding of single words and simpler sentences. Wernicke's comprehension is significantly impaired, and speech, while fluent, often lacks meaning or is filled with neologisms or made-up words. Let's move on to semantic PPA. This deeply affects the understanding of word meanings. So semantics is the meaning of a word. If I say giraffe, you should come up with a picture in your head, and you know that that's an animal, comes from Africa, long neck, has spots, can get the leaves on the really tall trees, that kind of a thing. Semantics is the meaning of words. Whatever the word is, pen, what is a pen? We write with it. Comes in different colors, can be plastic, throwaway pen, can be a metal pen, can be a fountain pen, can be gel. So individuals with semantic PPA can produce fluent speech, but the words may not come together quite as meaningfully. So sentences can be grammatically correct, but the sentences, the words, they don't all stick together. So it's harder for the listener to understand what they're saying. So they may struggle with naming objects or understanding isolated words, isolated versus in context. If I'm talking to you about, oh, my favorite pen stopped working when I was writing my novel today, that's me talking about pen in context. If I'm cooking dinner and I say, honey, pass me the pen, he might not understand pen because it's not in context. So understanding in isolation can be very compromised for the person who has semantic primary progressive aphasia. So semantic PPA resembles anomic aphasia, which is more fluent versus a non-fluent aphasia. Both conditions feature fluent speech paired with significant word-finding difficulties, particularly in naming objects. Both can have grammatically correct sentences, but being unable to retrieve specific words, leading to pauses or substitutions, using more generic things like words like thing or, you know, that over there, and not naming things. The key distinction lies in their comprehension abilities. People with semantic PPA have a deterioration in the understanding of word meanings over time. Those with anomic aphasia usually have intact comprehension but have a hard time pulling out the word. So challenges with word retrieval and naming in both conditions reveal a striking similarity in their impact on communication. So let's move on to the path of diagnosis and early intervention. As you can imagine, if you were the one sitting in the neurologist's office, you know your words are not coming out. You're sitting next to your wife, and your primary care doctor sent you to the neurologist, and now you've just gone through all these tests, and you haven't really given it tons of thought because it's painful, right? When you are faced with something that can be life-altering, we kind of, you know, want to avoid it. We stay in denial. So you get this diagnosis, the words primary progressive aphasia. And you're like, what on earth is this? But that early intervention, once you do get a diagnosis, there are steps that need to be taken, particularly with speech pathology, to help maintain communication for as long as possible, do a lot of family and person education and training about language, working on communication strategies. This is why it's super important to get help for it. So receiving that diagnosis provides both clarity and uncertainty. It raises so many questions, and that's why this is such a complex disease, because there's a lot of future planning that has to happen, but most people won't do future planning because they don't want to think about the future. So that's why I struggled with this episode, because I understand the implications, the ramifications of such a diagnosis. But getting early intervention, early diagnosis can help you prepare, help prepare your family around you. So let's pivot now and talk a little bit, real in some specifics, about speech therapy's role in navigating PPA. So as a speech pathologist, we're in the business of communication. We know there is no cure right now. I mean, There's research. There's tons of research going into it. The best in our field, in neurology and neuroscience, they are looking for a cure. But until we have that, we have to put things in place. We have to emphasize preserving language abilities and exploring new avenues for communication. We identify a priority vocabulary, nonverbal communication strategies. We are in the day and age of technology. What we can do with our personal handheld computers, whether, you know, it doesn't matter which one you have or if you have one at all, if you have a tablet, if you have a computer, if you're listening to this, you are hooked into technology in some way. And that's where speech therapy can really come in and help work on preserving language, utilize technology in a variety of ways, and provide lots of education and support to families. It's a collaborative effort, and it's all about quality of life, helping people maintain connections and expressing themselves for as long as possible. In previous episodes on this podcast, I emphasize a lot about connection because how we talk is often how we connect with others. So what happens when we lose suddenly from a stroke our ability to talk, or we lose very gradually our ability to connect via talking to our loved ones? So as a speech pathologist, we want to really dig into understanding the person with PPA, what their strengths are. We also want to look holistically, what is their work situation? Because diagnosis often can happen from 40s to 65. Those are prime working years, right at the height of a career that this is starting to impact. So there are so many implications with that. So when we do a diagnosis, we're not only just looking at the speech and language, we have to look at grieving, family support, coping mechanisms. We have to help provide education. Often we help tie the person and their family with PPA into support services because we can't do it all, right? As much as we would like to, we can't do it all. We have to tap into other professionals, other support networks, the National Aphasia Association, Frontal Temporal Dementia Community. Both of those associations are working really hard on research and providing guidance and information for families to navigate this. So once we do an evaluation, we have to put together a plan of care. And it's not just us. We're not doing this like us therapizing. I am not in the business of therapizing. This is a collaborative intervention and support. So we want to focus on preserving language for as long as possible, putting strategies into place, providing education. So this advocacy and awareness and understanding of PPA is right up our alley. It's all about communication and connection, support groups, educational materials, other resources are part of our role in helping people navigate PPA. So we talked a little bit about PPA, how it progresses versus aphasias that may come on suddenly. We talked about the three types of PPA and how they might present. We talked a little bit about why early intervention is important and the role a speech pathologist can take in this. And not every speech pathologist works with PPA. So if your physician sends you to a speech pathologist, make sure you ask even before you do the consultation, do they understand PPA? Do they know what it's about? Do they, you know, how can they help? It's a really important question to ask. And then when you get into the consultation, you need to ask some targeted questions. How do you help? What's your approach? That kind of a thing. Making sure that your time and energy is spent with someone who understands not only where you are today and can help you today, but can help you down the road. So it's essential for both in the immediate and the long term to understand what PPA is about, understanding where your resources are, where your support networks are, and it's also important to get counseling. Counseling with a psychologist or a therapist or a grief counselor that can help you navigate some of the emotions and aspects that are going to come along with this. When we can band together and tackle this head on, as hard as it's going to be, we can still help give quality of life, help you form that path moving forward. So I'm going to wrap up today's episode about primary progressive aphasia. I have many more episodes planned. We're going to get into more aspects, the caregiver perspective. We're going to dig more into some of the more medical parts of it. We'll have a separate episode just about communication strategies, just as another way, because I'm always flying the flag about communication strategies. Whether you have aphasia, primary progressive aphasia, or you have Parkinson's, it's about strategies. And we have to stop and think about, how do we communicate? How do we fix communication breakdowns? How do we set up the environment for success? All of these wrap together. And so you're just going to hear me beating that drum, kicking that horse over and over again. It's about communication and connection. So I want to point out to you that each of you listening, whether you have a diagnosis or you know someone that does, you are worthy. You deserve quality of life, and you deserve to live the life that you want, that is fulfilling for you. We're going to conclude today's episode on navigating life with primary progressive aphasia. And I want to acknowledge for each of you your strength and resilience. So this is a journey that requires courage, love, and support, qualities that each of you possess. To further empower you, we've created a PDF called the 10 Ways to Build Resilience Checklist. This free resource offers practical strategies to bolster your resilience, which is a key companion on your journey with PPA. You can download your free copy by going to DoLifeSpeechPathology.com, and on the homepage down at the bottom, you will see this resource. Click on the download button and make it your own. Take this checklist, read through it, and think about how you have resilience, how you can build more resilience as you move forward in your path with communication. Thank you, thank you, thank you, as always, for joining us on the Listen for Life Aphasia podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you, as always, for joining us on this podcast. Together, we're building a community of understanding, support, empowerment. Stay tuned for more episodes that guide, inform, inspire. Remember, you are not walking this path alone. We are here together every step of the way. Take care and stay resilient.
Thanks for tuning in to the Listen for Life podcast. We hope you feel empowered and supported. Head over to listenforlifepodcast.com to see the show notes with links and information from today's episode. Do you have a topic, a resource to share, or a guest recommendation? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know in the comments section. Wishing you a fabulous week.